The gang is almost all here. Pro Wrestling Powerhouse Radio Network proudly presents Pro Wrestling Obsession Live. I am your host tonight, the Prophet Rick Craig. I also have my co-host with me, Sean the Blitz Forrester. Sir, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. How about you?
Recovering from the flu, but I'm getting better. Voice is coming back, and I feel powerful tonight, so I'm ready to rock. Got my Bowmeister, Bo Johnson, out in Wyoming. How are you tonight, sir?
I'm doing good, Rick.
Awesome. Glad to hear that. And who do I have from area code 937?
Well, good evening, Mr. Forrester and Blitz. You've got the Buckeye Big Mouth with you tonight.
We've got the Buckeye Big Mouth himself with us tonight.
Yeah,
as well.
You know, when it rains, it pours. That Blog Talk Radio crashed me hard earlier tonight. We're trying to get our show kicked off, and it just crashed like hell.
No, we don't like that. Let me get my props out of the way real quick, gentlemen. As earlier stated, we are brought to you by Pro Wrestling Powerhouse Radio Network. You can find them at www.blogtalkradio.com/Pro Wrestling Powerhouse. You can visit them on their Facebook page, www.facebook.com/Pro Wrestling Powerhouse, or their website, www.prowrestlingpowerhouse.com. And if you're on the Twitter, at PW Powerhouse. This is Pro Wrestling Obsession Live. You can hit us up at our Facebook page at www.facebook.com/Pro Wrestling Obsession. Tonight, ladies and gentlemen, we have a very special guest, Buckeye Big Mouth from the state of Ohio. I proudly present to you Dr. Jerry Graham, Jr. Jerry Jaffe, how are you tonight, sir?
I'm doing very good, Prophet Rick, and thanks for having me on your show.
Oh, it's an honor to have you tonight. We've all been looking forward to speaking with you for a couple of weeks now. And you wrestled in one of my very favorite promotions of all time, the WWA, and we'll get to that here in a moment. But I guess to get people started and understanding the background, obviously you've got a very powerful name, Dr. Jerry Graham. How were you able to become Dr. Jerry Graham, Jr.? How did that happen?
Well, back in the 70s, I became acquainted with the original Dr. Jerry Graham, who, as the students of the game know, is one of the biggest names of all time in the 50s and 60s, and he was
exactly
very close to Vince McMahon, Sr., and he was doing a lot of the ideas and stuff that they were doing in those days. We're coming from Dr. Jerry, and as he got into the 70s, he started getting a little older. He didn't want to get out of the business, but he'd already had three brothers, so he had the idea of having a son. So the original tag team was Dr. Jerry Graham and Jerry Graham Jr., and we started wrestling along the independent circuits mostly, Ohio, West Virginia, New Jersey, New York, and Michigan and Ohio, of course, too, And we had a good time together, good runs. Jerry had his own personal problems, which are pretty much public, but he was the one that got me jump-started. And when he retired, he just told me to take the name Doctor and go with it. So I tried to live up to the name that he gave it to me himself. So we tried to live up to it, and we did the best we could.
So you actually took the doctor moniker after he retired. You just were Jerry Graham Jr. initially.
That is correct. Mm-hmm.
Okay, very cool. How long of a run did you guys have together?
Jerry and me, maybe off and on a couple of years. But it wasn't steady because he was always moving around the country, and a lot of times he'd go visit friends, and he wouldn't wrestle for months at a time and that. So I'd be wrestling a lot of single matches, still using the name Jerry Graham Jr. But he opened a lot of doors for me and with promoters. And he wasn't the only one. Nobody gets anywhere in this business on their own. You've got to have friends that want to help you move along, and I had enough people that seemed to think I had the ability and the talent and the connections to get me in with some of the better promotions, which I did pretty well, I think. You always wish you could have done better, but a lot of guys didn't do as well. So I'm satisfied, and it was the best days of my life, 35 years in the business of pro wrestling, and I loved every second of it.
So what made you decide you wanted to be a professional wrestler? Was there just a moment in time where you just stood back and said, you know what, I'm going to give this a run?
When I was a kid, I used to watch wrestling on television all the time. It's all I ever wanted to be was a wrestler. And an incident happened at our house, which I have no recollection of, but all the my mother and father and people talk about it. A friend of my dad's, named Benny Green, doesn't matter, was friends with Billy Darnell, who was a big wrestler in the 50s, 60s also. And he was in Toledo once, so they brought him over to our house to a party. And I was up. I was a little kid, but he let me stay up. And he was bouncing me around on his knee and putting, wrestling holds on me and not just playing with me. And some my dad and mom thought that maybe it rubbed off then because I worked out with Billy Darnell when I was 3 years old. So that's right. But I never, that's a true story. I never wanted to be anything else. All my friends wanted to be policemen, cowboys, firemen. I always wanted to be a pro wrestler. And that's why I've often said I've never suffered from male menopause because I've always done what I wanted to do. And I did it in a professional and the right way, without making trouble for people. Unless, sometimes somebody makes trouble for you, you got to defend yourself. And that's it. But that's it. I've always wanted to be a wrestler. And, here's the best part. I went into the Army thinking, well, you're in the Army now. The old days are over. Your dreams of being a wrestler, this and that, are gone forever. So when I got out of the Army, I took a job driving a truck for a wholesale meat company. And lo and behold, the man that managed the service station that serviced our trucks was the wrestling promoter in Toledo, Martino Angelo. He was one of the wrestlers of the 30s, 40s, 50s, and 60s, and used to manage. A lot of people don't remember Angelo right away, but they remember the man that he had taught and managed, but it was the Beast. The Beast, yeah. In the 60s and early 70s, Angelo was his manager. And Angelo taught me how to wrestle. He took me to the gym, and we worked out, and he introduced me to the Sheik. And I started working for the Sheik, who was one of the biggest attractions of the 60s and 70s, and he took a liking to me, and we used to go over to his house. He had a ring in the backyard and everything, and it was just things kind of fell into place. It was like it was meant to be. I was really bowled over when one of the first people I meet when I got out of the Army was a pro wrestling promoter. It was like fate. Then two or
exactly.
three times in my career, I got disgusted and disappointed like a lot of guys do. So I'd quit and say, well, this is it, and then somebody would call me with a better deal. So it was like, I don't want to get too metaphysical here, but it was just like I was meant to do this, and every time I tried to get out, like Al Pacino said in The Godfather 3, they drag me back in. And that's exactly the truth without any exaggeration. Always somebody would call me after I said, I'm quitting, I'm not doing this anymore. Then, here's a good deal for you, and you can here and there and there and here. And I had a really good time, and I enjoyed the business every minute of it.
Outstanding. Area code 260, who do we have on tonight?
Robert.
Robert, how
Robert
are you,
Rose.
Sir? Robert Rhodes, I've been looking forward to talking to you, sir. How are you tonight?
Doing real good.
Very
I'm
good.
I'm 67 years old, and I go back to the days of WWE, Dick the Bruiser, Dr. Jerry Graham, the Mulligans, Lonzo Ball, and the whole bit.
Absolutely. We've been talking a little bit on Facebook as well, and I was hoping that you would have the opportunity to join us this evening. Obviously, you have a couple questions you'd like to ask Dr. Jerry, so I'm going to let you have the stage for a moment, Robert.
Dr. Jerry, I've been wondering about you.
Well, what can I help you with?
Well, I often wonder what happened to you in the toast of the East Coast.
Well, I got old.
Why are you playing up in the WWE?
I just turned. Last Friday was my 66th birthday. Does that answer that question? I'm still managing.
Yeah, that answered that question.
Okay.
That answered that question. Yeah, I wondered all these years about you, because your moniker and how you work in the ranch. Working, I like WWA.
Thank you. I enjoyed being there, too. That was my favorite promotion as well.
But, I was there for the changeover from WWA to WWE, but I'm a long-time wrestling fan of the old days.
Yeah, well, it's certainly a different business today. And aesthetically speaking artistically speaking, I like the old days better. But you got to admit that the new days is the most profitable. And one of the first things I learned from the old-timers when I started, when I was a young-timer, was we have one goal. We have tunnel vision. We want to sell as many tickets as we can, put as many butts in the seats as we can, and make as much money. And obviously, they're doing that today better than ever. So just because I don't particularly enjoy wrestling as much as I used to, what they're doing is obviously the correct thing because they're making money, and that's the only barometer there is how much money
they're
making.
But it's also about entertaining the fans.
Well, if you entertain the fans, they'll buy the tickets and buy the pay-per-views, and so they're putting out although, you know, a lot of people will tell you that Vince McMahon was the greatest promoter of all time, and I happen to believe that statement, even though I don't particularly like him. But you got to go by results. But I don't think there's that many people realize how he became that. See,
I was in that road. I know what he did, and a lot of things that weren't put in print that he did with WWE and Vic the Bruiser.
Well, no, I'm not. I wasn't going to say anything negative, although we could do a whole show on my negative thoughts about him. I was going to say what he did was he harnessed the new technology, the cable TV that went all over the world. And the fans were already there. A lot of people don't know. In the 1970s, Sports Illustrated did an article that professional wrestling sold more tickets in the United States than than NFL football, Major League Baseball, basketball. And the reason is there's so many fans and there were so many matches all over the country, sometimes a little arena with 80 or 100 people, Madison Square Garden with 15,000 people. And so what he did, he saw that these fans were all over the country, so he brought them in with the technology of pay-per-view. And the real thing that he did was master the technology. Now, if you wanted to get into the negative stuff about him, I could fill a book with that. But I was just mentioning that he was a step ahead of everybody else, and that's how he ended up where he was at. He was the first with these pay-per-views, television, cables, where they could see him all over the world, and that's how he did it. I went to Kuwait with him once. With him, he wasn't there, but for this promotion. We got off the plane in the middle of the night, and there was thousands of fans, thousands, because they'd been watching WWF at that time on satellite in Kuwait. And it was just like, I felt like Elvis Presley. I'd never seen anything like it. There was thousands of people waiting just to see us get off the plane. And so he did a real good job in putting butts in the seats, is the point I was getting at. Other things, I'm sure, I know what you're getting at too, Robert. If you know what was going on at that time, there's a lot of negative things happening also, but that's what Vince did to build up the promotion, was the technology.
Well, we'll get back to Vince here in just a little moment. I'll get more of your comments on what you think of today's product. But let's get back to Dr. Jerry, the early days. You said you went to see the Sheik. Now, I'm assuming that's up in Detroit?
No, he was running Toledo as part of his territory, and Angelo was for the Sheik. So he had me come down to the sports arena, and I had just gotten out of the Army, and later the Sheik used to make jokes about it. It was funny, and good-naturedly, he says, when Angelo brought me in to meet him for the first time, he said, I stood at attention. I didn't even know I was doing it.
Are you talking about George Edward Farhat, the Sheik?
I'm talking about Ed Farhat, the original number one Sheik. Yeah.
Can I ask you a question?
If I know the answer, I'll give it to you. What do you want to know?
How was the flames out of the trunks done?
You want to know something? I used to referee matches where he would throw the fire, and I couldn't see how he did it. Obviously, it's some kind of a magic illusion trick, obviously. I mean, I don't know. I watch a lot of guys really sloppy. They bring flash paper in the ring and stuff, and you can just see. But whatever he did, he was really smooth with it because I would be refereeing, and I could not see how he did it. I couldn't see it. He was that good. And I would tell you, I know some other guy that used to throw fire. He'd put gunpowder in flash paper, and he stuck it in a phony thumb that he put on his wrist. And he had to use a greeny stick'em cap. And it was pretty smooth, too, but I knew how he did that one. And the cap would light the gunpowder and the flash paper, and it would go, boom, I mean, a big flame. So that's the one I did know how they did it, was with a phony thumb with a attachment underneath that kept the flash paper and the powder. But how the Sheik did it, I absolutely can't tell you. I would if I knew. I would if I knew, but I don't know how exactly. Obviously, it's done with flash paper and stuff, but how he was able to execute it, I don't know.
Now, I grew up, Dr. Jerry, back in the days watching the Sheik. I'm over in the Indianapolis area. And my first taste in wrestling, and I'm sorry, Blitz and Bo, you have to hear this again, but since Dr. Jerry's relevant to the WWE, I thought it would make sense to tell my story again. But I grew up watching WWA on television with my father at 1 o'clock in the morning on Saturday nights or Friday nights, whichever day they put it on there. And my very first exposure was a Sheik fireball to Dick the Bruiser's face. That was my very first exposure to pro wrestling. So as a six-year-old boy, that hooked me in pretty quickly, seeing somebody burn somebody's face and cowardly trying to get out of the arena without getting... That's right. I was not expecting that at all. So that was pretty cool, and that's how I got into, you know, wrestling 40-some-odd years ago. So the Sheik has always been, you know, we talk about the Sheik. He's always been somebody near and dear to me as my first villain.
A legend, the godfather of hardcore wrestling. But there's one last thing I'd like to mention about the technology with Vince. And that is this: if they had that technology back in the 60s, where they could go into everybody's house all over the world, how much would a pay-per-view draw with a Sheik and Abdullah the Butcher against Dick the Bruiser and Wild Bull Curry?
Right. Or Classy Freddie Blassie or somebody like that,
yeah. No, just take four of the biggest names, and they would be, it would be packed. It'd sell as many tickets as they do today, if not more. But they didn't have the technology. One time Terry Funk told me, he said, this would be a great business if the towns would come to us. Well, then 50 years later, the towns are coming to us now.
That's right.
That's right. But it was but I'm just saying that they could have done big business if they had that technology back in the 60s, if they could have had a national show with a national pay-per-view, but the technology wasn't there then. But I just make a point about what Vincent harnessed, what the potential. I like to put it in perspective. Yeah.
Robert, I'm going to give you one more question real quick, and then I'm going to have to let you go, bud, okay?
Dr. Jerry Grimm, I just want to say it's a pleasure talking to you. My all-time favorite here was Dick the Bruiser.
Well, he was a great wrestler. I mean, he was a wonderful guy, Dick the Bruiser, and he was absolutely an icon to the business. Dick the Bruiser and the Sheik were both top of the line guys, and he was a great guy to be with. And it was nice talking to you too, Robert, because you seem like you're a real fan. And if I was able to help you a little bit, increase your knowledge of the game, I'm happy to do it.
So, Jerry, how did you hook up with Dick the Bruiser in the WWA?
A promoter from Cincinnati named Les Ruffin saw me wrestle. He worked for both the Sheik and the Bruiser, and he saw me wrestling in Detroit and in Toledo, and he said, Bruiser, why don't you use a friend of mine, Jerry Jaffe? So I went over there, thanks to Les Ruffin, and I would work for Vic on, sometimes he'd give me 2 days, usually it was just Indianapolis, and then 20 years later, Dick the Bruiser and I were business partners. So it just shows how, well, maybe 15 years later, we were business partners. Then I left there. That was one of the times I had quit. That you're going, you're doing jobs every night. For those fans who don't know what that expression means, you're getting beat every night. You see you're not going anywhere. Then Jerry Graham made me his son, so we started being relevant. I didn't care about win or loss, but I wanted to be relevant to the business, to the show. I wanted to be somebody that if somebody beat me, they beat somebody. You know what I mean? Not just a piece of meat. And then when Jerry went out to California, I said, well, that's about enough for me. I'm going to get out of the business. And then Les Ruffin called me and says, Paul Christie and Roger Kirby just broke up because Kirby went to Puerto Rico, and they want a partner for Christie. And I told Bruiser to use you, so they brought me in, and they started using me right. And Christie and me actually jumped the gates from what they were. Paul Christie was a great partner for me to have. He was a great wrestler. He knew the business. I learned a lot from him. And we would go to places and all over Indiana, southern, down by Louisville, out by Evansville, up and down into Illinois, Springfield, Peoria, big houses. Then the first time I got paid for a main event with Bruiser, I was used to getting underneath pay and I thought they made a mistake and gave me too much money. I thought I better give some of this back before they catch it. It really made a difference when you were on top and business was good. It made a hell of a lot of difference. That's why when I see these guys like Eddie Mansfield on TV, that's been years ago, crying because they didn't make any money. It's because they didn't draw any money. The business was very simple. Today it's more complicated because they got advertising revenues and stuff. They always paid, every promoter I ever worked for paid you better if the house was better. And if you were the main event, you got even more. And I never met a promoter that didn't use that system. And I did very well with Dick the Bruiser and Wilbur Snyder, his partner, and I wished I could have stayed with them forever. That was just, they were great guys.
Yeah. Jerry, what year did you begin with WWA?
I would say around 1977 or 78. I never kept tracks or journals or anything like that, but right around 77, 78, yeah, right in that area there. As a top headliner, go back to about 74, 75 when I just started working with them. Yeah, as a thing. And one thing I noticed about the WWA dressing room is that everybody seemed to have a camaraderie there. Most promotions I've been to, everybody's plotting against each other, trying to get somebody else's spot, because the way professional wrestling is structured, if you're going to get ahead, it's got to be at somebody else's expense. If you're going to get into the main event, that means somebody else has got to be pulled out of the main events. And I've never seen a lot of that in Indianapolis. Everybody seemed to get along. But when I would go to many, many different promotions, there's always people in the back taking the promoter aside. We should do this, they should do that. And it's true. The only way you're going to get ahead is at somebody else's expense. It's still structured that way today.
Yep.
I remember a lot of these guys were complaining about The Rock wrestling in was the last WrestleMania? Was he in the main event? I didn't watch it.
Right.
They say, well, he didn't work all year. Well, he might not work all year.
Well,
but
he's the one who put the butts on the seats.
That's what I'm saying. He draws the money. And a lot
right.
of guys just don't get the concept. You could take a guy that's a mediocre worker, and if he can talk good, he will draw you money. And I can name names, but I don't want to have any of my friends say I called the mediocre workers on radio. And just as conversely, you could take a really good mechanic or technician, and if he can't talk well, he's not going to draw you any money. And it's the guys that can, I mean, they got to have some ability. I mean, I'm not talking about just guys stumbling around not knowing what he's doing, but a guy a little bit less ability can draw a lot more money if he can turn himself into a personality that the fans either love or hate. It's just a characteristic of the business. I've seen it again and again, guys that can do the talking to the guys that can draw the money. I remember George Cannon, rest his soul, told me that the mechanics work the middle of the card. The main event are the crazy guys, the personalities.
Right.
And
the showmen.
There's a place for everybody. There's a place for everybody.
Sure.
I'm not looking down on anybody. To me, anybody that's in this business from the opening match to the main event is a brother of mine, metaphorically speaking. Some of them hate my guts, I suppose, but some of them don't know me. Right now I'm working as a manager for Andy Shane, who I think is a tremendous talent in the NWA, which I helped start a promotion. Here it goes again, Powerbomb Championship Wrestling. We started here, got on television, got sponsors. We did real well. Then I just didn't want to do it anymore, so I dropped out. The other guys didn't want to do it without me, but then they regrouped, and they started the promotion again, and so I got dragged back in again, managing Andy Shane, because I can't tell Andy no, because he's my boy. And,
right.
But so here I am back again managing, and we're on television. But now I just have to show up, and the worst thing that can happen to me, it hasn't happened yet, these guys are very good, is I won't get paid. I don't have to put up, well, we lost $1,000 tonight, mine, yeah, I owe $300 or whatever it is. You know, that's there's no more pressure. Even if I don't get paid, I really, if they have a bad night, I told them, you don't have to pay me if you have a bad night. We're doing all the tapings in Toledo. So it's just a matter of driving 10 minutes to get to the arena and not wrestling, just talking. So,
right.
And if you go to the NWA Facebook page, they show every one of our TV shows complete on that page.
Excellent. Excellent.
Well,
that's
not, yeah. It was Powerbomb Championship Wrestling, but they say they're discontinuing that page because at the last Cauliflower Alley, they made a deal to get in with the NWA. And that's an interesting thing that's happening right now. They're doing very well. It's an uphill struggle, but I think they're doing a good job of organizing it. But what always happens with these groups is they start fighting amongst themselves. And I'm hoping – I haven't seen any evidence of that yet. I've seen a lot of cooperation, camaraderie, and I'm hoping that they can put some kind of a promotion together, because when I was with the Powerbomb Wrestling, I contacted two or three local promoters in the Ohio, Michigan, Indiana area. He said, why don't you come in with us, and we'll share the expense of producing a television show, and we'll use some of your guys, some of my guys, and some of these guys, and we'll mix it up. We have a lot of different talent, and you guys, we all go run our own towns the way we want to. And not one person wanted to do that. It made so much sense. Huh? It made so much sense. And when I was back with Dick the Bruiser, we had four or five guys that I approached saying that, you know, any deal you think is fair, we need to generate some more money for our TV. One guy was in Lima. He wasn't interested. One guy was up in the Detroit suburbs. We had TV in all these towns. And we couldn't get anybody to we needed, you know, more talent and more bosses for each town, and not one person wanted to get into it. Well, when Victor Bruiser offered me Toledo, because he saw what a hard worker I was and that I was a pretty good businessman, he and I went partners in Toledo, and I was happy to get his tapes. I didn't want to sit there and make our own tapes and this and that. It was
sure.
ridiculous. He kicked in the tapes, and we ran the promotion on a 50-50 basis. And then I got us into Detroit. So Dick and I were 50-50 partners in Michigan and Ohio, and he maintained Indiana, Illinois for himself because he already had that, and that's fair. He paid me good to work on his Indiana, Illinois shows, and I got half the profits in Ohio and Michigan. So it was a really good time. I made money with Dick the Bruiser, and the guy was great to me. And
well, I tell you what, I want to talk to you about territories here in a minute, but if you don't mind, Dr. Jerry, I have a list of wrestlers. I'd like to shoot you some names and just get your thoughts on them real quick. Do you
I'll
mind
try.
Doing that for me?
No.
All right, Dick the Bruiser's up first.
One of the big attractions of all time, great guy, mean inside the ring, but a real gentleman outside.
How about Ox Baker?
Ox Baker, really, really good, impressive-looking guy. He was a friend of mine. I haven't seen him in years. He was a really good interview guy. He made some money in Georgia and the Carolinas, I believe, one time. And I think he was just mean in the ring, but nice out of the ring also. Nice guy.
But, boy, did he had a look, though, didn't he, Jerry?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Ox Baker was excellent. 4 stars for Ox Baker. I mean, that's as high as we can rate him here. That's as high as I give is 4 stars. Except for myself, I give me 5 stars, but everybody
excellent.
Else gets 4 stars.
All right, back to the original Sheik. What's your thoughts on his gimmick and what he did for the business?
What he did for the business was good because he got attention. He got people talking. He was crazy. He did stuff that was a pioneer as far as the brawls and the fighting and stuff. He and Bull Curry. Bull Curry, they came up about the same time. They were friends. In fact, a lot of people don't realize, I believe the Sheik is Fred Curry's godfather, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, really?
If that's a mistake, I apologize, but I've heard that. The Sheik, later on in life, he turned on me for some reason, and I never knew why, because I always looked up to the guy like an older brother or an uncle or something. I mean, I would have taken a bullet for that guy when we first started together. I really thought he was great, and I was just sorry we ended up on a... I just don't understand what happened. He stopped using me, and he never told me why.
Be darned.
What are you going to do? But he was okay. I rate him as all-time great. He was an all-time great.
Cowboy Bob
nice
Ellis?
Never met the man, but he was a great wrestler. I never had the privilege of meeting him. But I watched him in the ring. He could go. So very talented.
Dr. Bill Miller?
Him I knew. This is funny because I was also in the wholesale meat business in Toledo, and he was a meat inspector in Northwest Ohio.
Oh, really?
Veterinarian.
I knew he was a veterinarian.
He was for his size, he could really move in that ring. And when he wasn't inspecting plants, he was a nice guy. But when he was inspecting plants, he wasn't so nice. But I'm Facebook friends with his son. Dr. Bill Miller was known all over the industry as a really good hand.
How about
this is easy. You get the other guy they like so far. Who?
Mitsu Arakawa.
I never met him, but he was...
You never met him, okay.
Never met Mitsu Arakawa. He used to work for Dick a lot, but never when I was there. Yeah.
How about King Kong Brody?
Excellent guy. He was big, impressive. I have to tell you about him. He and I were pretty good friends. And we were working our promotion up here, and things was starting to slide. So I was just negotiating a match between Brody and Wojo, who was a big star up here, the great Wojo. And then he got killed down in Puerto Rico, and so that was that. I was sad to see him die, and it was a terrible thing what happened down there because they were fighting over a booking, as I understand it. And it was to kill somebody over that kind of thing. I mean, nothing sadly, you know, there was no conviction, so no sense pounding on a, you know. But he was a real, real hell of a worker, of a big man. You had to believe that guy. You had to believe him. He was good.
Was he as stiff as they say?
I never wrestled with him. I was on plenty of cards with him. We socialized together. But at the time, he was a heel and I was a heel, and just he got in a fist fight with Dick the Bruiser once in Springfield, Illinois, and he told me in a dressing room, Dick had a couple stitches. He told me he was in his early 30s and Dick was already in his 50s, and this was a real genuine down and out street fight. And he said Dick the Bruiser was the toughest guy he ever fought, and when he was in his 50s, you can't imagine how tough he was when he was in his 30s.
Right.
As big as Brody was, he said it was all he could handle. He said he called it a draw.
And Dick the Bruiser wasn't a very big guy. I mean, he was physically big and bulky, but he wasn't a very tall man.
Well, he was about maybe 5'10", 5'11", maybe.
Yeah.
But he was tough. He was a tough
yeah.
guy. And for Brody to say that, you think about it, in your 50s, you're pretty well lost a lot of your speed, your endurance, your timing.
Sure.
And he held Brody to a draw then. So to me, that's kudos for Dick the Bruiser. But I like Brody, too. And he's been greatly missed since his tragic loss, yeah.
How about Spike Huber?
He was a talent. I don't know what happened. I can't believe that the Federation didn't pick him up. They did for a while, but they didn't use him. He was one of the best wrestlers I was ever in the ring with. He was, he had an edge. He was Dick the Bruiser's son-in-law at the time, but it didn't matter.
Right.
He produced. If it had been Joe Schmo, he would have still been there because that man knew what to do in a match. He knew what made a match. I really enjoyed working with him because he was a pro, and he just knew what he's doing. He had the looks, he had the personality, and I remember one time I had to laugh. I was going to wrestle him at the Chicago Amphitheater, so I did a typical heel interview where I was talking about how horrible he was and blah blah blah. And they bring Spike on. He says, "Boy, that Dr. Grant is a Sam Menninger. He really doesn't like you. He's really tearing you to shreds." Yeah, and he says, "Well, Sam, I don't think Jerry's probably all that riled up. He's just the way he is. I mean, how much better could you get to be aw shucks after getting lambasted?" I mean, talking about getting another Spike Huber story was on December 26th, the day after Christmas, we were in Springfield, Illinois, and these two little girls, about 13 years old, with braces and glasses, were there at the age where they're ugly and cute at the same time, had saved up their money and bought Spike Huber a warm-up suit. So they came into the ring and they presented it to him, his pants and the jacket and everything, and he's putting on everybody's cheering, and Paul Christy ran out in the ring and beat him up and ripped the thing to shreds. And the girl started crying, and the fans turned on us so bad that we had to grab our clothes and our bags and run to the car, and it was winter out, and I'm in my wrestling trunks and boots, and it started a full-fledged riot, and I was saying, "Thank you, Delco," when the car started, because I don't know what would have happened if they were out to kill us. They made those girls. So they later made an announcement that the promoter was going to replace the sweats, and then the following time you couldn't get into place because Huber, I forget who his partner was me and Christy, and it was the place. It was just electricity. It was just such a hot match.
Jerry, do you care to know who's next on the list? Your next on the list was Golden Bully Paul Christy himself.
He could do anything in a ring. He could do anything. He could be a babyface. He'd be a heel, high spots, drop kicks. He was just like a complete package. And I have all the respect in the world for him. And I haven't heard from him lately, but every now and then he'd call me up to see how I'm doing. And I like that's important to me, is keeping contacts and communications open. And I don't know how, I haven't heard from him in a few years, but we would talk occasionally. And he was a great wrestler and a great guy.
How about Moose Sholok?
All my friends.
I'm trying. Moose Sholok. How did you know?
Moose
did you know him?
Moose was a great guy. Moose was I can't help it. He was a good wrestler. There's one of my matches with him on YouTube, I believe, and in my early days. And he did the strongman stuff. I mean, he was limited in what he could do. I've seen tapes of him when he was younger. He was a lot quicker and better. He was a little bit older when I used to wrestle with him, but he was still good and he was believable, and he was really good in tag team matches, getting the hot tag if he had a good salesman
sure. For
a partner. Yeah.
And then he'd get that moose call going and you knew you were in trouble.
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. How about Pepper Gomez?
Never met him, but he was a hell of a good wrestler. He used to let people jump on his stomach. They could get up on
right.
step ladders, have fans do that. He had an iron stomach. He used to do thousands of setups. He was... I refereed matches with Pepper Gomez in them, but I never got the privilege of working with him, and it would have been a privilege. Yeah.
How about the world's most scientific wrestler, Wilbur Snyder?
Well, Wilbur Snyder, he was kind of a quiet guy. I didn't feel nearly as close to him as I did Bruiser, but he never did anything bad. You know, I mean, I would go and he'd be running the show, and he would treat me with respect, and I would get paid properly. And I wrestled him in several times. One time I wrestled him in a semi-main event at the amphitheater in Chicago, and he was good. I mean, he, once again, he was a little bit older than, you know, in his career, but he could move, and he could execute the moves and had the psychology and everything. He was a good. I liked working with him. I didn't know him that well. I can't give you a personal thing, but he was quiet. At least in the dressing room, he was quiet and reserved. He was all business.
I think he seemed like one of those examples that you just gave, Jerry, of somebody who had all the moves but didn't quite have the personality to get to the very top of the business. He was always a really good mid-card, you know, lower main event level guy, but the man could wrestle.
Well, when he got with Bruiser, he made money because they took Indianapolis over. And there was another thing that I really thought was smart. They got Chicago television, and Vern Gagne got Chicago television on different stations. So instead of fighting each other, they came up with a novel idea, which I think was great. They were going to go partners in Chicago, and with two separate TV stations on separate channels with separate crews, separate commentators, they were going to mix and match the talent and have big shows at the amphitheater. It worked for years successfully. And I would be at the amphitheater with Bruiser's guys, and it was just a... it was just a beautiful idea. Instead of fighting, it's like, can't we all just get along? They both had TV there. So why would you want to start two promotions and fight each other? Or you want to have one big promotion? And so
right.
They did what I think was genius. At the time, as soon as two guys got TV in the same town, usually a war started. But these guys got together, and they were just genius. It was genius.
You know, that
they'd
makes a
there.
Lot of sense, thinking about back when I was a kid, because I remember one day, I mean, I'm used to seeing Dick the Bruiser and all his guys on my local television station. Then all of a sudden, one Saturday, out of nowhere, he wasn't on, but the AWA was on with Nick Bockwinkel in its place for just 1 week, and then they were back. So obviously Gagne had a tape or something like that to help Bruiser for a week or something.
I remember one time we went into Fort Wayne, and it was Gagne's show. I remember that. I didn't quite know what was going on because I know Bruiser and Gagne were friends. But it was his show, and they used some of us. I was there. Wojo was there. El Bracero was there. Bruiser was there. And we had a battle royal at the end, which was really wild. And I couldn't quite figure that out. Gagne was going to start. They had something going where they're going to be partners or something. But I wasn't privy to any of the behind-the-scenes manipulations at that time, so I just went with it and took my pay and went home. And
three more names for you, Jerry, and then we're going to move on. How about Bobby the Brain Heenan?
I met him a few times. He was a little arrogant. I tried talking to him once. He kind of brushed me off. But once again, who was I? I wouldn't want to talk to me either if I was him. But he just kind of ignored me, and so I said, to heck with it. So I have no ill will. I know, he's written a book, and he's doing well and but that way, and he had some health issues. I hope everything's okay right now because I pray for him. But I reached out once, and when I got, snubbed, I just figured, well, I'll just keep away. I don't want to make any enemies. So I just, that was that, okay.
How about Don Kent?
Oh, the older brother I never had, Bulldog Don Kent.
Three-time tag team champion with you as well, right?
Well, I thought it was more, but I could be wrong. Maybe I was one time with Christy. But anyway, yes, we were multiple times tag team champions. Don Kent, he was one of the best mechanics, and he had done good interviews. Everything was there, and he was absolutely the boss of our team. Even when he was working for me and Dick, as I was one of the partners, when we got in the ring, Don Kent was the boss. And he told me, he says, when we're doing interviews, you're the boss. You act like you're in charge. When we get in the ring, you listen to me. And it worked perfectly. We did a lot of business. We made money together. And the thing that the thing that brought, we had this bruiser, we called it Bruiser Bedlam with the WWA, and there's been a lot of derogatory negative remarks made about the promotion on the internet, but I can't get too mad because my son, who's a real PhD at a college, he told me that if I'm going to get mad at what people say about my internet, he wasn't going to let me play with the computer anymore. So, but what happened was, and Dick was a smart man. He says, we could compete with the WWF national shows because they would come to the towns very rarely. And they were big, but he says that when Turner got started, he says, it's just too big to compete with. But I want to tell you this right now. Every single year that Dick the Bruiser and I were partners with Bruiser Bedlam, Ohio, Michigan, we made money. We had a big match for Wojo, had a mixed match with Leon Spinks. We had Tommy Rich coming in, the Iron Sheik coming in. We had big shows, and we always made money. I mean, we had nights where we lost money, but by the year, we always made money. And Dick and I saw what was coming, mostly Dick. He was a senior partner. He said, we just can't compete with two big promotions like that. One's okay, but two is too much. I think he was right. We quit at the right time, and we shut it down money ahead. And that's what I say. So all these people that you know what I say about these people that talk badly about me and our promotion? It's always the curs and the mongrels that snip away at the tails of champions.
Beautiful.
Thank you.
Okay, your last person here, Doctor.
Okay.
Scott Steiner.
Scott Steiner. Okay. You were saving the best till last, weren't you? Obviously,
yeah, exactly.
You know what I'm going to say.
Most of our fans are
you?
Unaware that you were a tag team champion with Scott Steiner.
That's where the other one came in. I was three times with Kent, one time with Christy, and one time with Steiner. I was five times. I forgot about Steiner. So Scott Steiner came to me. He's living in Ann Arbor, graduate University of Michigan, Big Ten champion, the whole works, All-American. And he wanted to be a pro wrestler. So I took him to the gym, and I trained him. And I taught him, and then I booked him as probably his first 100 matches. He was with us at Bruiser Bedlam. And I made sure he worked with all the best guys like Don Kent and, I humbly say, myself. And we made sure that he learned how to work. I didn't want to get him with anybody where he gets sloppy habits. And he said to me, what do I owe you for training me? And he says, because it was traditional, you charge somebody money to train them because you're using your time and your effort. And unlike boxing, you don't get a piece of their gate. Their payoff. Once they go on their own, they're on their own. I said, Scott,
right.
Here's what I'm going to charge you. I says, if I think you're going to become a big star, if you're ever in a position to help me, you help me, and our debt will be even. And if you can't, just the fact that you're willing to, that's it. Because, you know, it's hard to get a friend to help because promoters don't want to hear from a wrestler that's got a friend. They don't want to hear. I did that at one time when I was a little bit newer because I was very good friends with Randy Savage. And I said to Dick the Bruiser, I said, you know, why don't you have Randy Savage come in here? He says, okay, I'll give him your spot. How's that sound?
That's beautiful.
No, I don't want to hear that bad. Anyway, Randy, rest his soul, and his whole family, Angelo, his mother, and brother Lanny, they were all good friends of mine, but not that good. I wanted to keep my spot there. But so anyway, Scott goes on and makes a big name for himself. And I now, once again, like I said, Christy used to call me, and George Petrosky, the Russian brute, still calls me once. I like that kind of stuff means something to me, keeping in touch. Steiner never called me. He'd come home, he'd call Don Kent, he'd call Chris Carter, he'd call the great Wojo, he'd call everybody but the guy that started him. And I didn't want any money, but, you know, you think you could call him and say, Jer, how you doing? I'm doing well, thanks for training me. But then, remember the man they called Norman the Lunatic, Bastion Booger?
Yes, Mike Shaw.
Well, okay, down in Atlanta, he told me, he says, didn't you train Steiner? And I says, yeah, why? He says, because they had a meeting once of all the stars. I was there, and I knew that Steiner, he says, I know you were a good manager, a good talker, good everything. They said they're looking for a manager to come to the Atlanta WCW promotion. They want somebody that's got experience in the territories but hasn't had any national experience yet. They want to be a new entity for most of the country. And he said, I thought for sure Steiner would raise his hand and say, I know a guy in Toledo. And he said, Steiner just sat there, didn't say a word. Nothing. And that's when I really got annoyed because that was his chance to for our bargain that we made, that he was going to help me if he could. He could have held his hand up and says, one of the guys could do work with the tag team and then have maybe six-man tags, so that kind of stuff would have been perfect. Perfect. They were giving my resume was what they were doing. So Steiner didn't help me. Then they had one of these Hall of Fame deals in Muncie, Indiana, and Steiner came in and he inducted me into the Independent Wrestling Hall of Fame in Muncie. I don't even there's so many of those ones going around, but I got a plaque here that they gave me. I'd like to see Scott again, and he was cordial, he was polite, but I'm saying, here you are, a success due to your own abilities, but I'm the guy that helped harness that ability and got you started, and I'm not worth a phone call, a Christmas card, you know. So there's your negative one. Steiner, I mean, I just wish it had stayed. I didn't want any of his money. I did not expect a check in the mail. You know, that was what I was looking for. I just thought that since I started him, he did so well in his career, a little something called, hey, how you doing? Not even
right.
I don't want him to kiss my butt. Just be a friend. But that was the one. That was the one you were waiting for. But and I still wish him no harm. I hope he does great things, but I'm just disappointed. I don't hate him. I'm not mad at him. I'm disappointed. That's
right.
But at this point in my life, what am I going to do? He's not going to rent space. He's not going to live in my head rent-free, so I just let it go. Yeah.
Well, Jerry, you had a reputation, and we're starting to run out of time, so I apologize, but I want to make sure we talk about this. You had a reputation of being one of the pioneers of talking. You were good, very good on the microphone. How were you able to hone your skills in front of the audience like that? Because you were bringing it when, you know, a lot of people were still relying on managers to do the talking.
Well, I always was a gregarious, outgoing person. I had some theater experience, but the basic thing was ideas to talk about. It came from myself, but a guy that kind of coached me along with vocabulary and stuff was Sam Menneker. He'd give me a few key words, a few things to help me. Like he'd give me the words, say, tell them you have a sesquipedalian vocabulary. That just means a guy uses big words. And then tell him you're not afraid of Moose Sholak because he's a valetudinarian. So I had to get out the dictionaries. That just means a weak, sickly person. And stuff like that. But most of it, I got to say, I'm not trying to be too arrogant, it's my own natural ability, because that was just something that came to me. We could spend another whole show on interviews and stuff that I did, how I got kicked out of Canada because the television union wouldn't take me anymore because I made too many anti-Canadian remarks, which down here, when I went to Indiana the first time, the first interview I did was, I'm a little bit nervous. Do you remember Bobby Knight got arrested in Puerto Rico? Okay. It was about that time. I went in and I said, I'm a little bit nervous about being here in Indiana, the Hoosier State, because it's a hotbed of the criminal element of the country. All the criminals come from Indiana. John Dillinger was a Hoosier. Ma Barker was a Hoosier. Bobby Knight mm-hmm. was a Hoosier. Okay. Now, if I said that in Canada about something that had gone crazy, the cameramen were laughing. I mean, they could see that it was what I was doing. I was just trying to get things stirred up. But I made remarks about Canadians in Montreal. And the guys just told George Cannon they didn't want me on there anymore. The union wasn't going to videotape me. If you can't get on TV, you can't work. But Cannon fixed that later, and that's another story which we don't have time for. How I got back into Canada because of Jane Fonda, and that's absolutely a true story.
Oh my gosh!
I've had a lot of things happen to me, and I got my book out, "Confessions of a Big Time Wrestler," and I forget. Mark Nowotowski, he's got a Facebook page where he sells that stuff, but Mark Nowotowski, and I have got an arrangement, he sells those books, so if they can look him up on Facebook. Or if you want to send me a letter on my Facebook page, I'll get you his stuff. I'm just Jerry Jaffe on Facebook. Come on, if you want to buy a copy of the book, Mark is selling them. We're doing a good job with it. The book is not about me per se. It's about the people I have met in wrestling and stories I have heard. It's divided into true stories that I've seen with my own eyes, stories that I believe from credible witnesses, and then, of course, there's always the old urban legends of wrestling. Plus, there's an hour-and-a-half videotape of some of the matches from the WWA that goes with it. So it's a pretty good package, Confessions of a Big-Time Wrestler. And contact me, and I'll forward you on to Mark. I should have had his site ready, but I didn't think about doing it. But there's a lot of stories in there about my run-ins. See, if you'd have asked me about Hulk Hogan and Ric Flair, I could give you a lot of negative stuff. But,
no.
We'll save that for next time.
I tell you, I very much hope that you can come back and join me again, because this was fun, and I could talk to you another 5 hours easily.
Well, I enjoy the subject matter, as do you, and the subject matter being wrestling and me. I really like me a lot. And I'd like to say hello to the president of the Dr. Graham International Fan Club in Tampa, Florida, Joyce Kennedy. I want to say hello. That I know she's listening, and that hello, and keep the fan club going, because who knows? Someday I may want to make a comeback.
Well, we're gonna catch up with you again, Dr. Jerry, because we didn't even get to the 80s. I mean, we barely got to the end of the 70s, I think. So
yeah, let this wear off a little bit.
You bet.
If people are ready for more of my big mouth, I'll be happy to give it to them.
Well, it was a pleasure talking to you tonight.
Thank you very much for having me on the show.
Thank you so much.
Pleasure was
all
yours.
We'll talk to you soon, buddy.
Okay.
Thanks,
bye.
Jerry. Bye-bye. Oh, guys, that was a lot of fun getting to hear about old-time wrestling with Dr. Jerry. And I just deleted somebody off the phone. Bo, are you still there, or is that you, Blitz?
I'm here. Blitz is here.
Bo, I accidentally disconnected you, so I need you to call back in, please. Oh, good grief. But he had some doozy of a story, Blitz. Which was your favorite tonight?
the thing with the sweatsuit.
Yes.
With the warm-up suit and having to run for it.
That was classic. And it sounds so much like those days. I mean, when you riled up a crowd and you had to, do what you had to do to get people fired up, and, you know, they had to have security and people like that walking down the aisles with you to make sure you survived. That's a classic. Bo, are you back, buddy?
Yeah, I am. I don't understand.
Sorry
what
about that.
There.
I accidentally disconnected you, Bo. That was my fault. Boo is right.
Yeah.
So I need to get some boos on here. Well, I don't know about that, do I?
Yes.
Oh! All right. Sorry, Bo. I won't do it again. All right, guys. We got to move on. Gentlemen, the sirens have sounded off. It's time for Think Tank. Are we ready?
Bring it on.
Let's do this.
All right. Today's Think Tank topic: who would you credit as the greatest tag team wrestler of all time?
Ooh.
This is going to be a tough one. I mean, I'm not even sure I have the answer to this one yet, but let's think of all the greats and who worked well, I guess, with others and really made the team look good in the ring. I guess we can throw out a few names, and then we can narrow it down. Bo, throw one out, Bo.
Let's go Dynamite Kid.
Nah, very good one. How about you, Blitz?
Tony Gurria.
I'm going to throw out beautiful Bobby Eaton. Bo, who else are you going to throw out?
Mr. Fuji.
Blitz?
I'm going to toss out one Big Show.
Okay, the Big Show. I'm going to throw out Arn Anderson. Let's do one more round, guys. Bo?
Michael Hayes.
Ooh. All right. Blitz?
Since you're already going the Freebird route, I'm going to go with Bam Bam Gordy.
That's a very good one as well. I'm going to throw out a man we've talked about several times this evening, Dick the Bruiser himself. All right, let's see if we can narrow this down. Who Now, the names that we have just put together, this list that we've just come up with, let's see if we can narrow this down quickly. What are we thinking?
Gordy has been there for his time with the Freebirds and in Japan.
Correct. I think Arn Anderson needs to be there. I mean, obviously his work with Ole, his work with Tully, his work with Bobby, his work with Larry Zbysko. I mean, how many legendary tag teams can one man be a part of? So I'm going to...
And, of course, the Brainbusters.
Well, yeah, I said Tully.
Oh.
So, I mean, he's been with four prominent, you know, wrestlers, tag team wrestlers, and they've all been champions. So it's going to be pretty tough to beat Arn Anderson. I mean, beautiful Bobby Eaton as well. I mean, Stan Lane, Arn Anderson, Dennis Condrey. I mean, he's been with a lot of guys, too, and he's elevated them. Steven Regal, William Regal. So Eaton is definitely one of the greatest. I don't know if we're going to get to a greatest.
Mm.
Bo, some of your guys. Who all did you bring up? You brought up Michael Hayes.
I brought up Mr. Fuji.
Yes, Fuji. Fuji's an excellent one.
Who else did I bring up?
Obviously wasn't that impressive, was it?
Apparently not.
I guess I'm leaning. I'm leaning towards the, and I'll prop Dick the Bruiser. He's been champion forever with the Crusher on many occasions, but that doesn't count, you know, with Spike Huber and Paul Christie, and you know he's probably been a 30, 40 time tag team champion if you count all of his partners too. So I guess what I'm thinking about, I'm thinking about worked with a bunch of different partners, was able to work well with the partner, carried himself in the ring, and be able to continue promoting the team at a top level, you know. And these guys have done it with a lot of people, so it shows their tag team value, I guess. Blitz, what are you thinking?
By that definition, with multiple partners, that's also why I put Big Show up there.
Yeah, Big Show's good. I mean, I can't deny that at all.
Like teaming with, just for starters, Sting, Undertaker, Kane, Jericho, Miz.
Yep. Absolutely.
I guess I'm in converse with that. I guess we can throw Kane in that mix, too, if you think about it. Kane.
Who's that? I'm sorry? I missed it.
Kane.
Kane, yeah. Kane. Yeah. There's a lot of them that have just done very well with. I don't know if we're going to get an answer to this, are we, guys? There's several of them that we've thrown out there that can lay claim to such a distinct honor and of being able to accomplish. So. I guess it's a draw. Well, we shall move on, guys. Are we ready?
Yeah. Yep.
Gentlemen, it's time for this week's segment of talking about the World Wrestling Entertainment. Bo Johnson, you're going to lead it off. What are we going to discuss first about WWE?
I want to talk about Mark Henry's outstanding speech. Give the guy a Emmy for crying out loud.
What's your thoughts? I mean,
from following stuff, you know, on Twitter and all the other stuff I've read, you know, it sounded, nobody knew, at least they weren't saying. Even Mark Henry was playing it up really well that he was going to retire. And the only thing that tipped me off about the whole speech was John Cena hanging around.
Right. I agree with you. I'm looking at it 2020, you know, hindsight's always 2020, and I got to see Raw, and unfortunately I already knew what was happening before I got to watch it, because obviously I see it, but watching it myself, and if I had to put myself not knowing what I already knew, the way he had John Cena in the ring, I guess I would have initially been suspect. But then he incorporated him with him and shook his hand and act like things were good. I would have thought he was legitimately doing it. Mark Henry's never been known to be the greatest actor on the planet in wrestling. You know, he's a big bruiser type of guy, big powerful man, but you know, the microphone has never been his strongest suit. But I tell you what, with the way he played that off, and then he even made that Mae Young comment to the person in the audience, and I mean, he just played it perfectly. I mean, this is one of the best swerves I can think of in many a year. Mark Henry did a phenomenal job, and like I've been praising Bully Ray and TNA, Mark Henry's really been stepping his game up too. Blitz, what are you thinking?
I'm thinking the same thing, because ever since Mark Henry started his Hall of Pain,
yes,
damn,
he's become a favorite of mine real quick. I mean, just because he's elevated his game so much. He's not the silly sexual chocolate guy, you know. He's a force to be reckoned with, and now you believe him when he talks. But I thought it was, if there were Oscars for professional wrestling, he would have earned one very quickly with that one. How impressed were you, Bo?
I was actually very impressed with it. I have a friend who we chat back and forth with every Monday night for Raw, and he was just, you know, I don't know, I couldn't explain his emotions because kind of through text message, but doing the whole
right,
thank you, Mark, text and whatever. And then when Mark slammed him, he's like, wait, what? And, I mean, he's not like us, you know, not deeply involved in the business. You know, he'll watch it and he knows it's fake. But other than that, I'm personally excited to see where this goes from here with this.
Now, I guess the next question to you gentlemen is, can Mark Henry win the title from Cena? Do you think it's a possibility or not really? Blitz.
For me, it's got to happen. For the simple reason that Mark Henry has never looked more dominant. Mark Henry has never been this over. He's never been this good. And if he doesn't win the title off of Cena, I don't think we'll ever see him with the big belt.
Mr. Johnson?
I'd have to agree with Blitz. He has to win it here. Personally, I'd love to see it built off this momentum that he got with this speech. You know, can you crashing forward with it until he wins it at Money in the Bank?
I'm not even sure he's going to win it at Money in the Bank. I think I'm not sure he's going to do it then. My thoughts, I guess, on this are, you know, Henry has legitimately talked retirement. So we know he's not, he doesn't have a, you know, a lot of years left before he decides to really hang up the cleats. Maybe this was a negotiated, you know, thing for his last contract with WWE. Hey, let me have one more run. I mean, I'm hoping to see it. I think it would be awesome. But I almost think Cena's going to take him the first round, and then when they have another rematch, then Henry will catch him off guard or something. I don't know. But very interesting to see this, see the, what ends up transpiring of this, because that was really, really good. And while we're talking about really, really good, I thought the entire Raw was outstanding. This was the best Raw I've seen in I don't know how long. Now, as you both are aware, I have it on Hulu, so I get to watch maybe half of what you guys get to watch, which might make it even better for me, so I don't get all the garbage that comes with Raw sometimes in 3 hours. But I also missed, obviously, Regal versus Cesaro Blitz. So I still haven't watched it yet. So your thoughts on the entire card, Sean? Or show, I should say.
It was definitely a lot better than most of what we've gotten lately. And my main thing, and naturally my favorite part of the show was Cesaro being with Coulter.
Which I saw absolutely none of it. I didn't get to see 1 second of that, so I need to, you sent me the, do me a favor,
right,
send me it again. I have a funny feeling I accidentally deleted it, so if you'll send it again to me so I can watch it tomorrow, that'd be awesome.
All right. And
but
I didn't
see nothing with Coulter.
I'm going to fanboy a little bit.
Okay.
Antonio Cesaro is probably the only guy on the roster besides Daniel Bryan and Dolph Ziggler that every time that he comes out there, he puts on a show that the crowd wants to boo the hell out of him. That's a big thing. But at the same time, you just can't help but be impressed with what he does.
Right.
I mean, Regal is not a small man. And Cesaro just threw him along with nothing.
He's a man.
Yes, he is. I want to get your thoughts on something else. I've noticed something, and we'll talk about Matt Stryker here in a minute, because obviously that's big news that happened yesterday. I've noticed something. You know, I don't know if you guys do this, but I overanalyze everything. If I notice something even small that's not being talked about, I'll try to make something relevant out of it. So let's go with me here with this one, guys, and see what your thoughts are with this. Every time they discuss the announcing team, Cole, JBL, Lawler, doesn't matter, they talk about all the superstars that the Shield has beaten up and whooped over the last, you know, 7 or 8 months it's been now since Survivor Series. They never say the Big Show's name, and he's nowhere to be found right now. What's your thoughts? They never say the Big Show but was one of these people that have been beaten up, and he's not been on programming for almost a month now. Do you buy into my theory, or am I just overanalyzing as usual? Bo?
I think you're overanalyzing it a little bit.
Okay.
But I do agree that it is kind of strange that they haven't mentioned Big Show. But
Mr.
that's
Forrester?
Just like a simple oversight.
Okay, Mr. Forrester?
Maybe that means Big Show's going to show up on TNA programming. No, that was bad.
You leave me no choice. Now,
yeah,
wipe yourself back up and get back up on your feet now. And all right, now legitimately, what do you think?
Legitimately, I think that at this point they don't want to draw attention to the fact that, hey, where's Big Show?
Well, that's valid. I do agree with that one. He's probably on vacation again.
Yep.
Go ahead, Sean. I'm sorry.
So it's not overanalyzing per se. It's just not a conspiracy theory for once.
Right. Well, that's a good point. Big Show's probably taking a break somewhere, and they don't want to talk about him and make people wonder where he's at again. Maybe they've got a surprise for him showing up sometime. So that'll be an interesting thing to come out of it. Fandango's concussion, I guess, is getting to be big news. What are you hearing, Sean?
Apparently, before he made it up to the main roster, Jai Curtis Fandango had multiple concussions beforehand. And much like Troy Aikman, it's probably affecting him more. But quite honestly, if the whole thing with Triple H and then Ziggler, if that hadn't that cold concussion thing hadn't come up, I don't think we'd be making as big a deal about it.
So do we see this as something that's going to be a problematic thing for him throughout his career?
I hope not. But it could very well happen, yeah.
Mr. Johnson?
If it's, I'm not sure if it's true. I mean, it could be for all I know. But with this, I mean, he has one now, obviously, and it's taking for, and it seems like it's taking a while for him to pass his impact test. It just seems to me that if he already has previous concussions, it's going to take him not only longer this time, but even longer, and, you know, should he happen to suffer future ones. And it might be a little more of a liability.
All right, we've got about a minute before we go into the next topic, so let's rip through this one. We need to once again talk about the Wyatt family. When are they coming? Bo.
Possible.
Bo, have you heard anything on dates?
I haven't. I read somewhere recently that they said possibly as early as next week. But then they also said something about this past Monday, too. They're thinking about it. So I hope soon.
I didn't get to listen to it yet, but I know our buddy on the Wrestling Swarm sends us, you know, his YouTube shows that he does, his little clips, I guess. And he just posted something to the Pro Wrestling Obsession page saying the Wyatt family will be debuting when, and I didn't get a chance to listen to it yet. So, excuse me, guys, I've had a cough. Sean, can you talk for a minute, please?
All right. I haven't heard about the Wyatt family either, but I'm really looking forward to them coming, especially with Bray Wyatt. Maybe in more of an anterior role for now, but I could easily see him chasing a mid-card title with him.
Okay, I'm back, guys. Sorry about that.
Feel better?
I got a, still got some stuff, so I'm not totally out of the woods yet on this stuff. All righty, let's move on, shall we? It's that time to get blitzed. Our PWO Wrestling Trivia Champion of the World, Roy Lusher, I don't believe is with us here tonight, Sean. Sean, talk again for a couple minutes. I'm going to get some water, and then I'll be better. Thank you.
Roy Lusher, Trivia Champion, has apparently put his job before his title defense, which is very noble, but it just, once again, leaves the Blitz hungrier for action. And the more opponents that I go through before facing the champ, the more powerful I will be. I wonder who my opponent will be tonight. Mr. Johnson?
Oh, I don't wonder since I'm the only one in the building.
Are you prepared?
I am as prepared as I'm ever going to be.
You're going to go without being shut out?
Going to give him my best shot.
All right, gentlemen. Thank you very much for covering for me once again. I've got some water with me, so hopefully we can lay this to rest. But anyway, I didn't get to hear what was said, but Roy Lusher does not look like he's joining us tonight. He did say there was a good possibility you would have to work. So, Blitz, what did you have to say to that?
The more, as I told Bo just now, the more opponents that I face before facing him, the more powerful I will be, the more fired up I will be. And the hunger, I take my title back.
That's right. And Bo Johnson, you are up to the plate tonight. You have your opportunity to take on the number one contender and the ability to possibly steal his contention shot. What do you think, Mr. Johnson?
Well, after seeing and hearing what Blitz can do, you know, sitting as the silent observer in the crowd, I'm looking forward to taking the challenge. I know I'm going to get thrashed, but I'm going to go down with a fight.
You know you're going to get thrashed? What kind of a...
Slap him.
Hey!
Bo! You don't tell... The person you're going up against, that I know I'm going to get thrashed.
Have you not heard of reverse psychology there, mister? Oof. Hey.
All right, now get up, Bo, and wipe yourself off. It's time. Let's go. 10 questions for the number one contendership of the Pro Wrestling Obsession World Trivia Championship of the World. The challenger, Bo Johnson, against Sean Blitz Forrester. Question number one. Several TV stations began canceling USWA broadcasts in 1990 after which wrestler superkicked his former valet from behind, resulting in her being carried out on a stretcher at the Dallas Sportatorium.
Blitz.
Forrester.
Gentleman Chris Adams.
That is incorrect. Bo, you have a free shot.
Shoot, this name just left my head.
Of course it did.
Servant.
Who was that, I'm sorry?
Garvin.
That is also incorrect. The correct answer, guys, is Hollywood John Tatum. Question number two. When Jay Lethal initially offered his open challenge to any wrestling legend on TNA Impact in 2009, which wrestler showed up and beat him?
Bo.
Bo.
Bob Backlund?
That's not correct. Sean, you have a free shot.
It was, hang on. I know it.
Five seconds.
Tatanka.
That's not correct. Well, the correct answer, gentlemen, is Jim the Anvil Neidhart. His only TNA appearance. Well, look at that. The old prophet's got a 0-0 score going into question three. Let's go on. In Florida Championship Wrestling in 1986, this wrestler engaged in a feud with Mad Maxine, wrestling as Percy Pringle's sister. Who is this wrestler? Just to let you know, silence is not a good thing
Blitz.
When you're on the air. Blitz.
Blitz. Peggy Lee Pringle.
That is correct. Otherwise known as? Peggy Lee.
I forget right off.
Leather.
Peggy Lee Leather.
Yes. Okay. 1-0. The Blitz has taken the lead. Question four. Which wrestling promoter was also responsible for creating the World Roller Hockey League, Pro Beach Hockey, and the Triple Crown of Polo? Which wrestling promoter?
Bo.
Bo.
Let's go with Ted Turner.
That's not correct, Bo. Free shot, Blitz.
No clue.
My goodness. All right. Four
Uh-oh.
Questions down. Only one has been guessed. The correct answer, come on, gentlemen. This kind of wacky stuff, it could only be David McLean. Do you remember David McLean? Gorgeous Ladies of Wrestling?
Okay,
no?
Now I remember.
All right, there
yeah.
we go. Now I'm going to see how much you guys were paying attention tonight with our guest, Dr. Jerry Graham Jr., because he gave you the answer to this question. Which wrestler was referred to as the man with the cast iron stomach?
Blitz.
Forrester.
Pepper Gomez.
That is correct. 2-0. Bo, were you not paying attention?
I missed the cast iron skillet part.
Not skillet. Stomach.
Sorry, cast iron stomach.
Pepper Gomez's stomach was so powerful, guys, that they would literally have people jump off the top ropes onto his stomach and not faze him. And this is legitimate.
Mm-hmm.
The man had a very powerful stomach. All right. Which former WWF star is now nearly 100% legally blind and uses a computer program to read his emails? Yes, wrestling fans,
Blitz.
We are still live. Blitz Forrester.
Yes. Outback
Blitz.
Jack.
That is correct. 3-0. Human Tornado, Quicksilver, Kevin Steen, and Paul London all teamed with which wrestler to become Pro Wrestling Guerrilla World Tag Team Champions?
Bo.
Super Dragon.
Incorrect, Bowmaster. Oh. Bowmeister, excuse me.
Blitz.
Yes, Blitz.
El Generico.
That is correct. Sami Zayn,
4-0.
That's
my second guess.
Another slap for Bo.
Yeah, I'm going to agree with that for saying that's his second guess. Who took his name as a sign of respect for his mentor, the great Sasuke? Who took his name as a sign of respect for him?
Blitz.
Forrester.
Takamichinoku.
That is correct. Takamichinoku is absolutely correct. 5-0 to Blitz. Which wrestler made his debut in a tag team match, teaming with Austin Idol against Nick Bockwinkel and Jerry the King Lawler? Made his pro wrestling debut in a tag team with Austin Idol against Bockwinkel and Lawler. Five seconds.
Rich.
Forrester.
Tommy Rich.
Incorrect. Bo, you have a free shot.
Oh. I deserve another
one. All right, Bo. Blitz. Stand still for me. Don't move. Move your head over just a little bit. Right there. Sid Vicious. Blitz misses a Sid Vicious question. I can't believe this.
Yes, I deserve a slap.
You deserve a slap, too, so
yeah.
Stand still. There we go. All right. Final question. Which manager is the, I'm talking about real here, not just storyline. Which manager is the stepbrother of former Olympian Bob Roop and is also the cousin of WCW's Fidel Sierra?
Blitz.
Forrester.
Bill Alfonso.
That is correct. That is correct. Once again, the number one contender has shut out another member of the PWO broadcasting team. Last time it was Ashley Mojo Farmer. This time it is the Bowmeister, Bo Johnson. But I will give Bo credit in acknowledging the fact that he was going to get annihilated and embarrassed on live radio. However, Bo, another performance out of you like this, sir, you will be relegated to enhancement talent. Are we clear?
Crystal.
All right. Oh, goodness gracious. Some pretty decent questions this week, huh, guys?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, pretty good, Bo?
Pretty good, yeah.
All right. It's time to move on, gentlemen. Time for some TNA talk. Blitz Forrester, you have threatened the Bowmeister. You have threatened your esteemed prophet. What have you threatened us with, Sean, so that everybody knows what we've been threatened against?
I've threatened for all three of you, including Mojo, to do your freaking homework and catch up on TNA so we can be able to all discuss it.
So, in other words, to have an educated conversation together.
Right.
Well, ask the question to Bo if he has.
Bo Meister, did you do your homework?
I've read the results, but I have not watched it.
Close enough. Prophet.
Yes, Blitz.
Did you do your homework?
Blitz Forrester, I've watched the entire show. I'm ready.
Good.
So what is your first topic for the evening, then, on TNA, Blitz, that we can join in on?
I'm going straight for the throat.
Go for the jugular.
Why on earth, and this is Bound for Glory series that got started, I'm going straight for the throat and jumping right on the case of the point system.
You must be talking about the notice, the disqualification thing.
Just the whole point system setup in general.
Okay, what's your gripe with it?
For those of us who like to keep track of the points at home, it becomes very tough when you start adding up different points for different kinds of wins. In my book, a win, in most cases, a win is a win is a win.
But they've always done the separation of submissions from pinfalls.
And I have complained about this every year. This is not an old complaint.
Well, now we have draws into the equation. Now we have disqualifications and countouts into the equation. And now we have negative points if you're disqualified.
As of last year, correct.
You lose 10 points.
They didn't do it last year.
I don't remember them deducting. Did they deduct 10 points for being disqualified? I thought it was for
if you lost by a
tap out or something like that.
No, it was a DQ loss, 10 points, minus 10 points last year as well because Samoa Joe got disqualified.
No, that's right. That is right because I remember he had negative points at one time. Or was that the year before? Last year he had a good run. The year before was when he was getting beat in every match. Regardless, it is kind of confusing. Bo, does it bother you even remotely as much as it does the Blitz?
The point system itself doesn't bother me too terribly much. I'm sure you're well aware of what I had to go through following TNA last year during the bounce.
Yes.
Through part of the bounce. Through for the 5-on-5.
Exactly.
What would bother me the most would be if they went like they did last year with the series and they did a lot of the matches on house show cards. What they did last year.
They did, and that's how, and you had a headache trying to get your 5-on-5s, or 5-against-5s, excuse me, updated because of that fact. You were constantly digging and finding the most current house show results so that you could get updated on the point standings.
Not only that, but when they did them on did a match or two on Explosion, too, and sometimes that wouldn't be updated for like a week.
Right.
So, I mean, the point system itself doesn't bother me. It's actually kind of, it's a little more weighted for the submission experts than it is like a pinfall victory. The outstanding 10-point deduction for a DQ.
Yeah, that's a little...
It's a little heavy, but...
Because you know what's going to happen. You know what's going to happen. I'm calling it right now. Aces and eights are going to be pains in the rumps. Since they only have one entry with Mr. Anderson, they're going to send people in and get opponents disqualified and get them to lose 10 points. I'm calling it now. It's going to happen on multiple occasions. Because they're making such a big deal about this minus 10 points for the disqualification. Aces and eights are going to send their goons in, interrupt matches, and get people disqualified and cost them 10 points. Now, what do we think about the contestants that are in the series? Sean Forrester?
I'm fine with all the contestants present, even Jay Bradley, who did have to earn his way in. It would be a good experience for him. My main complaint is Joseph Park being in there. Besides,
well,
you just
wonder what's going to happen with the storyline there. I mean, I'm just waiting and waiting and waiting. We keep seeing an Abyss appearance every now and then. But I don't know. I mean, are we going to see something develop, or are we just being played longer with the Joseph Park storyline? Bo.
I think that, I mean, yeah, we've seen Abyss here and there, and isn't Abyss the television champion at this point?
Oh,
so,
who is? He is, isn't he?
So, I mean, we're going to start to see the storyline kind of weave its way back to a finite point where this is going to happen, But I'm not sure if Abyss is going to confront Joseph. Or Abyss. Okay, I don't remember what I said. But if the two are going to confront each other in the ring, or if Joseph realizes that he is Abyss, I'm not sure which path that's going to take yet.
Well, I'm going to go with the latter, because I don't see how they can confront each other when they are the same person. I don't know how they could pull that one off. We're going to get this, and I've been calling it for over a year now, so when, I don't know, but eventually we're going to see this multiple personality thing come out with Park going ballistic and turning into Abyss, like he's Bruce Banner in the Incredible Hulk type thing. What do you think, Mr. Forrester?
Honestly, I think the whole thing is run its course, and there's not much that can be done to save it.
You're already bored.
It's been a whole year with this whole Joseph Park thing. Yeah, you could say I'm bored.
Yeah. I guess I have an issue with Daniels and Kazarian being in the tournament. Or in the series, I should say. They've wrestled almost exclusively as a tag team for a year now, so I don't get why they're in there. Same with Hernandez. I mean, I like Hernandez. I wish they'd do something with him. He's always been the lower card for the most part in TNA, but he's a good wrestler. He's obviously not the best speaker in the world, but it's interesting to see him in the tournament. Obviously, seeing Rude and Aries in there, they wrestle singles enough to make it make sense. But considering the Daniels, I'm not quite sure why they're in the tournament.
Well, I'm between us, I'm kind of, I'm personally hoping, this is the fanboy, that wants Daniels to win it. Though we know it's not going to happen.
If it happened, do you think it would, a bad influence split would occur?
Probably. But much as I want Mark Henry to win the WWE title, I really want Daniels to win the world title. I have seen no reason why he has not been champion.
I think he does a good job. He gets heat. You know, he's a good wrestler. I don't understand either. I mean, I don't know. Doesn't make sense to me either because he's got the talent to do it. Now, extended runs, I don't know about that, but you know, at least a couple months or three. All right, we're running out of time for this segment. Let's get to the last thing that I want to talk about now, and that is the return of the Main Event Mafia. We saw the Stinger has recruited, surprise, surprise, Kurt Angle. Who else is going to be in this new Main Event Mafia, Bo?
When I first, saw the report last week that Sting was, bringing back the Mafia, I was, okay, who could they possibly bring back? I mean, obviously, if you bring back the original group, the only one that really stood out was Angle, obviously.
Well, Booker T is probably not there, right?
Yeah, no Booker, no Kevin, no... Steiner.
Yeah.
So it's I'm kind of racking my brain. Who else they could bring? I mean, the only other person I could logically think Sting could bring out would be Jarrett, but that would be. I mean, I don't know if Jarrett's willing to come back.
Yeah, we really don't know what his status is.
Yeah.
When we were looking at the hand, Bo, you missed this part. When we were looking at the hand, Sean, shaking, did it look like an African-American hand to you?
Possibly.
I thought so, too. I'm hoping it's not D'Lo Brown. That's who I'm hoping it's not. Does that concern you as well, Sean?
Seeing as he got fired from Aces and Eights?
Exactly.
Yeah. It's a case of I'm just hoping he goes backstage and stays there. That's over.
There's no possibility whatsoever, right? No possibility whatsoever with Booker T being out of action for a while. Right?
Right. And who knows?
Not coming
maybe they
back.
Brought back the Pope. Huh.
Brought back who?
The Pope.
The Pope? Oh, the Pope. Well, we got to start coming up with some names, guys. Who else is going to be in this new Main Event Mafia?
I have a very good idea who.
That is a very good who.
All right, who, Sean?
Why not Samoa Joe?
Why not?
I mean, let's be honest. The whole idea of the Main Event Mafia was veterans who were in it for respect. That was the original Main Event Mafia. And when it comes to TNA, Samoa Joe is a veteran.
Yes. Which leads to my next name and why I think this name is going to be there as well. And that would be Cowboy James Storm.
very possible.
Impossible.
I mean, he's not got a whole lot of respect lately, right?
Yep.
He's definitely a veteran. Who else? We're running out of time, guys. Who else could possibly be in the Main Event Mafia?
Hopefully,
do we think?
Maybe Bobby Roode.
I don't think that's happening.
Yeah.
Let me throw this one out. What about Abyss himself? That would make sense.
It would make sense, but Abyss, the whole Abyss thing, the whole Abyss gimmick is mostly alone. A one-man wrecking crew.
Yeah, but he was also a part of Immortal. So we'll see. All right, guys. It's time for our final segment of the evening. All right, I think we've been properly warped back in time. It is time for Back in Time with our hosts, the Bowmeister, Bo Johnson, and none other than Sean the Blitz Forrester. Take it away, gentlemen.
Okay, let's start out with June 15th, 2007. Sensational Queen Shorty
Martel. Hang on a second, Bo, hang on a second. Let's preface this, because there's possibly a lot of new listeners who haven't heard our show before. We need to let them know what Back in Time means. Sean, what does Back in Time mean?
Back in time, we...
Down you go. There you go, too, Blitz. Back in time, people who are listening to the show for the very first time, we go back in this week in history, in pro wrestling history. So what has happened in the past during the week that we're on in previous years? Bo, what do you have for us this evening?
Okay. Starting off, June 15th, 2007, Sensational Sherry passed away at the age of 49.
That one still bothers me. John?
All right, this is something very relevant to what we just talked about. June 19th, 2002, TNA debuted their first weekly pay-per-view. In the main event, Ken Shamrock won the vacant NWA World title in the Gauntlet to the Gold. And some performers who are on there still that are with TNA now include AJ Styles, James Storm, Christian York, who was away for a long while, and, of course, Jeff Jarrett.
Very cool.
Okay, June 20th and 21st of 1993, World Wrestling Federation cancels house shows in Oklahoma City and Tulsa to give their people, the fans, time off to recover.
From what?
I don't have that information.
Explosion, right?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I was going to say, it has to be the explosion.
Yeah.
Oh, if you're going to give us this stuff, you have to give us why.
I haven't gotten that far with that one.
Yep. Not to mention that the rest... Ouch. That hurt.
I didn't try to hit you. I was trying to slap Bo. All right, continue, gentlemen, please.
As a second note to the house show thing, some of the wrestlers, Undertaker, Kane, Stone Cold, were also sick and fatigued, so maybe, just maybe, WWE should consider doing it again, take a couple days. In any case, we up next, June 21st, 1956, the first wrestling show is promoted from the Capitol Arena in Washington, D.C. Capitol Promotions, promoted by Vincent McMahon.
Vince McMahon Sr.
And
very cool.
This is what, and this became quite, this arguably the start of the WWE Empire.
Right. Nicely done.
Okay, June 18th, 2005, CM Punk wins the ROH World Championship from Austin Aries and proceeds to turn heel as he gets ready to take off for WWE. This, a lot of people see this as the predecessor to his 2011 storyline.
Right. Very cool.
June 17th, 1983, World Class Championship Wrestling held their Wrestling Star Wars event, and this was headlined by Terry Von Erich and Bruiser Brody defeating Bam Bam Gordy and Michael Hayes for the Texas version of the NWA U.S. Tag Team title.
Well, when you said World Class and you said headline, I knew Terry Von Erich had to be in there somewhere.
Yep.
Yep. Okay, June 20th, 1968, Mr. Gennosuke of FMW fame was born.
Say that name again.
Gennos, and I'm butchering the pronunciation. Probably. Gennosuke? Am I saying that right, Sean?
Yeah.
Okay.
Why do I not know this person? Who is this person?
Japanese FMW, Frontier Wrestling.
Right.
Hardcore style. He's one of the bigger names, as far as I remember.
Huh, okay.
You may know the... recognize the Gennosuke clutch. Which he created. Which looks very similar to the Ranhei or Kofi Kingston SOS.
Right. Well, this is bothering me. I need one of you guys to send me a video of this person, please. When you have time.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Sorry, Bo Meister.
Okay.
No, no worries.
You know what? Hang on. No, that's not okay. give me your best shot, Bo. You ready?
Ready.
Okay. Continue, please.
All right. June 19th, 1994. Owen Hart wins the King of the Ring.
2 did he beat, do you know?
He defeated Razor Ramon in the final. 1-2-3 Kid in the semifinals. Tatanka in the quarterfinals. And Doink the Clown to qualify.
Doink the Clown?
Uh-huh.
All right, sorry guys, I'm back.
Okay, let's go off with another one. Go off with another one. Prophet might not remember. June 20th, 1984, British wrestler Bubblegum was born. Bubblegum is a male.
Who in the Sam Hell is Bubblegum?
he's very prominent on the British circuit, doing a lot of like Preston and all the other shows.
He's teamed
with another one. Yep.
Are you still active?
As far as I could find, I hadn't seen a retirement on him, but that may have been, if he did retire, it was really recent.
I need a video on this one as well. Meanwhile, let me get in my position. All right, Bo, wind up.
Ready?
Okay. Oh. Jaw's a little crooked. Oh, please continue.
All right. Yes. June 17th, 1986, in Japan, Antonio Inoki defeats Andre the Giant by submission.
Was there any titles at stake or anything of the sort, or was it just a... Just one of those shocking moments where Andre lost.
It was just a shocking moment. No title up for grabs, as far as I can
tell. Okay. Continue, Baumeister.
Okay, let's go with June 20th, 2004. Triple A or Triple A AAA. Held their 12th version of Triple Mania. Headlined by La Parca taking the mask off of Cybernetico, or as we know him as Judas Messias.
Aha. Very cool.
And
okay.
All right. This will probably be the last one. June 16th, 1996, the Outsiders, Scott Hall and Kevin Nash, go up. Attack Eric Bischoff for not revealing their opponents for the Great American Bash. And also that night on Nitro, Mongo McMichael joined the Four Horsemen.
Oh,
and
God.
Quite possibly the biggest Four Horsemen mistake in history.
Jeez.
Yeah.
Do you have any more, Bo?
You know what? I think we're good for tonight. We've got like 30 seconds or whatever.
We've got about 10 seconds. Sean, why don't you close this out tonight since my voice is going again.
Thank y'all once again for listening to Pro Wrestling Session Live. Join our Facebook page, www.facebook.com/Pro Wrestling Obsession. Have a good night, and we're out.